a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. Episode 198. Oh, you know, I joke about it, but it boggles my mind that I've done this thing 198 times. Oh, it's so funny. A year ago, this strange opportunity to do this show entered my life, and I had just had no idea what a journey it would be on. It would take me on, you know. It's just been kind of crazy. If you'd have told me, yeah, you know what, you're going to be able to find time in your day during a startup, in addition to whatever else you're doing, to do a show, an hour. I'm not going to say Monday through Friday. I do a lot of reruns. That was a fact that I just had to come to in my life and schedule and how I make my money and whatever. But if you'd have told me that I would find the time to do this and I would stick to it and I would do it, I would have said to you, you know what? I know myself pretty well, and no, I won't. But I did. So as I'm coming up on 200 episodes, I don't know, there's no magic number at 200. There's nothing about 200 that is like, oh, wow, if you just get over that 200 mark, then everything changes. It doesn't. I mean, I've kind of made this a milestone in my life to reboot and change some things and get more, to introduce some new stuff to the show. I'm going to try really hard to work out my tech issues and get distance interviews going. I have such an incredible network of interesting people, some of which you're going to meet next week because I'll be staying with my friend Tim Ferlin in Cincinnati. So speaking of Cincinnati and my trip next week, okay, I've been dropping all kinds of hints about what we want to do. We have a definite plan for episode 200. I'm giving myself one rerun between now and then. So, because I'm assuming with traveling and stuff, Tuesday is going to be pretty rough. So probably Tuesday will be a rerun. But next week on Wednesday, episode 200 is going to be a special live 2-hour episode of The Counterposition. So we're going to be able to take calls. So a lot of you are listening on demand. And if you catch up over the weekend and you hear this at 9 p.m. Eastern to 11 p.m. Eastern next week on Wednesday, we will be doing an extra long live show from the Breadbox Studios in Lexington, Kentucky. I will have Tim Ferlin with me for sure as my co-host. And we'll be taking calls from any of you. I'll definitely be taking some calls from people that you hear about on this show. I'm hoping to get a call from Chris Stefanik. Maybe, and I'll have to look at the time difference, but maybe even get Michael Miley from Estonia to call in. I got some interesting people whose name that you hear on this show, people you maybe have heard interviewed. If I can get Mark Gieschek, he's to dial in, that'll be kind of fun. My podcast partner from the Over the Counter podcast. We're just gonna have some fun, and Tim and I, when we get together, we always have a pretty interesting conversation. Next week, the show will probably slant a little more intellectual than it normally does, just because Tim's the smartest guy I know, and he's one of the deepest human beings I know. And so when we get together, we tend to go deep and more towards the philosophical, or at least more towards the existential and experiential nature of reality. And so that should be fun. Tim is just an amazing human being, and I cannot wait. He's one of those people that I just don't communicate with enough, There's people in my life that I really, really care about and that I just have incredible conversations with. And I need to, that's part of what I want to do after episode 200 with the tech changes I'm working on, would be to start getting more of these people on and just using the counter position as an excuse to catch up. One of these days when Calyx launches full on, and that's what I do for a living full time, I'll be able to travel more. And I want to work from location on a few of these, with a few of these people, and interview people in those places. So probably in the next 100 episodes, you're probably going to see a deep increase in interviews. I really love doing it. And it's just something I want to do. But so next week, Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, that's 7 p.m. Mountain. And that's 6 o'clock drive time out on the left coast, the west coast, the best coast. Hoping to get a call in from, speaking of the west coast, Justin Schneer, maybe Adam Maring, who knows who might show up. So it should be fun. We're going to take some calls, and I'm really hoping to get calls from some of you that I have no idea who are listening. I look at the numbers of how many people are listening to this show, and I'm like, I don't have that many friends. Well, I do, but I know I get random emails and stuff occasionally. And that's another thing coming up after episode 200. I'm going to really start pushing and griping about feedback. I really want to hear from you guys. I want to get emails. I want to see tweets. I want you to come. If I put something up, part of the reason I don't bother putting the show up on Facebook all the time, though I should, is I was kind of hoping that that would be a place that would emerge where people would put some comments, and just people don't really comment much on them. And so I get it, man. Here's a confession. I'm not a big podcast listener. I love the idea of podcasts, and I do listen to a very select few podcasts and live shows. I definitely will throw Breadbox Media on live and just kind of listen to whoever's on sometimes. And I've been shocked by how good some of the stuff is. I feel bad. I'm like, I should really raise my game. I really enjoy some of it. So if you're listening to my show, but you don't listen to Breadbox Media, I would encourage you to just download the app. Just look, there's a new app that we just launched. Go to the app store, download it, pick your local stream, and I think it picks it for you now at this point, or it offers you one. And just listen to what's going on. So anyway, there's my pitch. Next Wednesday. So we will have phone numbers for you on that show. We're working out, they gave me a phone number for a direct line so we wouldn't have to worry about some technical difficulties that we might have. But I don't want to give it out because it's not going to do you any good till Wednesday night. But, you know, and then in the next, and that's the other thing is in the next 100 episodes or so, I mean, a lot of things are changing in my life. We're launching Calyx as a 501c3. I am in the process of fundraising right now. A year from now, I may be able to be live a whole lot and take calls all the time. I would really enjoy that. So anyway, there you go. There's the state of the counter position address for the day. Episode 200, Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, is going to be a special celebratory 2-hour live show. I'm going to be in the studio in Lexington, working right there at the board with my producer, Ethan. And that is if I can get him to keep from, you know, catching Pokemon. Evidently, Jennifer Longworth, I'm moving on to the Pokemon report. Jennifer Longworth, who is obsessed with Pokemon Go, as I have said before, tried to throw my producer Ethan under the bus and distract me from Jennifer's clear and evident Pokemon obsession by pointing out that Ethan, who is a very young man, who's right in the middle of that, you know, that video game demographic, I'm going to tease him about it, but I mean, it's kind of fitting that he would be interested in Pokemon Go. I mean, it's not like, you know, not like Jennifer's obsession with Pokemon Go. I mean, that is just bad. Oh, the inside jokes that I throw out on this show. Anyway, so so ended up the chatty first segment here. Went and saw the new Jason Bourne movie last night. Not going to give any spoilers. I'm not even going to say no spoilers because I'll tell you what happened. The trailer happened. I get it. These kind of movies are a little formulaic, but I hate when you go see a movie and it's basically the trailer and they filled in all the cool chase scenes, the full scenes. I mean, it's like, it is a movie that is the trailer happened. You kind of see where it's going and that's what happened. It was just like, it was good. I mean, it was really, I have a thing for spy movies. It makes me want, there's something about someone being that capable and being able to think that quickly that someone with an ADD addled slow mind like me is kind of interested in. And the one thing that I came away with is I think there should be a new sport, and I'm going to start practicing this sport, and it's going to be called Bourne walking. So there is that, Matt Damon does that real deliberate, super quick, but not running, but not race walking walk. That real intent, just like real positive motion forward walking, that Jason Bourne walk, where he's just walking quickly with intent. I'm going to start Bourne walking. I think the Bourne walking ought to be an Olympic sport. Is it too late to get that into Rio? I think Bourne walking. So yeah, I am. So maybe we'll, maybe we'll set up something in the parking lot of Breadbox Media and have a Bourne walking race on Wednesday night. Probably not. All right, so let's go to the break. I got a couple things teed up, and we'll see you in a second. You're listening to The Counter Position.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so I tell you, the shop has been so slow. It's that time of year when everyone's on vacation. People are out of town. It's hot outside. There's people are on vacation from all the buildings around us. It's just I don't know what the deal is. It's just, I mean, the bottom fell out yesterday, and it was good. I got some time to work on some stuff and did a little maintenance and, you know, just kind of did some stuff that you can't do when you're busy working on customers every other minute. But it was almost a, in some ways it was nice. In some way, this slow time of year is nice, but I tell you what, I could do for some distraction. It's like with the state of reality these days, the state of our political reality and the state of our cultural reality, I could do with some distraction. So if you've been listening, you know that I've been deeply, deeply frustrated and just beside myself with the direction that things are going in the world and in America, globally, all the above. It's just I never thought I would live to see times exactly like these. This reminds me of I don't know how to say it. It's like a, I remember when I was a non-denominational charismatic Protestant type, and you would hear these woeful prophecies about the end times and how crazy everything could get. And, you know, there's going to be the mark of the beast and all this stuff. And, you know, you see the occasional early church father talking about, you know, there'll come a time when people who are reasonable and sane will be considered mad, and people who are mad will be considered the wise ones. And, you know, and it's like, I think of Plato talking about if a really good, truly good man ever came into this world, that they would lay hands on him and crucify him. You know, and I'm starting to, you know, it sounds real pretty to say that, oh, the church is the continuing incarnation of Christ. But the bad news of that is that the church is the continuing incarnation of Christ. So, man, there is no way to Easter except through Good Friday. And so I'm just been reckoning with, you know, and at the same time, you know, at the same time as this is all going on, I am launching my apostolic calyx. I am thinking about how to form, where to place, how to brand, how to set up, how to even lay out places that will be places of conversation and dialogue and communication. And I want to, and these are places that are not just extensions of the bubble. We're not retreating here. We're going out. And so, I mean, when I look at some of the stuff, like you hear about Title IX stuff happening on campuses and stuff, and you know, trigger warnings and safe spaces and all this stuff, I'm just like, what in the world is going to happen when we're talking to these people on a daily basis and trying to just have some common sense and use common sense a little bit? You know, what's going to happen then? So, I don't know. It's like, it's scary to me. It's really frightening to me that I'm going to have to be in that environment to a certain extent. And that just, it's made me more aware of the challenge that's before us, you know? And so, in the midst of this, but there's been a shift in me, right? Also, again, warning, if you're tuning in for the first time, this isn't your typical Catholic radio. This is reality filtered through the lens of a singular human person who hopefully is somewhat mindful or interesting in the way that he views reality. So you're not getting a catechesis today. I mean, actually, ironically, I am going to do a little bit of kind of amusing catechetical look at the political world here, but I've felt a shift in me in the last few days after I just couldn't stay frustrated. I couldn't stay that level of frustrated. I couldn't stay frustrated where I'm just, you know, trying to light a real candle and hold it up against the dumpster fire of reality and say, hey, look at this. We've got a fire too. I mean, it's just overwhelming, you know, everything that's happening. And, you know, and maybe it's because the Democratic convention, well, last week it was a Republican convention, and I'm just looking at this party and just for the record. So politically I have been, since I was in any way conscious, I've been a Republican for all practical purposes. At least I usually vote for the guy with the R behind his name. I've been a fairly straight ticket voter most of my life. When I wasn't distracted and disillusioned and didn't vote. Well, I don't think I've never been distracted and disillusioned not enough to vote. I didn't vote this last time around because they didn't get me. I had just gone to Colorado and the state of Missouri and me didn't get our things in line and I didn't get my absentee ballot in time. But this time around, I'm just looking at this and I just don't recognize the party that I've been a part of. Now, given I've only been kind of politically conscious as kind of as an adult human being thinking about reality and looking at the political aspect of that and how that relates to the rest, you know, probably since my, I don't know, maybe my early 30s. I mean, my 20s were just caught up in the Christian music industry and wanting to save the world and all kind, you know, kind of hanging out with people in that world and wanting to, well, basically build the same apostolate that I'm working on now, except it was a different version of it back then. Though ironically, it's coming full circle in a lot of ways. But I just don't recognize this party. I saw that they're in the RNC and just looking at Trump and looking at all these people. I do not recognize the party that maybe I just had goggles on. Maybe I just had blinders or something. Maybe I just didn't see. But because my political awakening happened while going to Thomas Aquinas College. And now that's a pretty intellectual school. And so my introduction to things political on the Republican side of things was having my two most beloved professors, Dr. Richard Ferrier and David Quackenbush, you know, heavily involved in the Alan Keyes campaign. And so that was, if nothing else, a very, very idealistic kind of quixotic Quixotian, if you will, tilting at political windmills. I love Alan to pieces, but I don't think he has a drop of political prudence in his body. And so, but I was all caught up in the ideal of having a philosopher king, man, of having someone who really, really deeply understands this. And I still am. I want someone leading this nation that understands what our nation is about. And that means understanding what reality is about understanding the role of God, the role that we play, the role that freedom plays, what the definition of freedom is, what is liberty, and how is it not license, you know, and all these things. And that's a lot of what I'm going to talk about in the last couple segments, is the role that freedom plays in the political world and how the political sphere and the religious sphere interact. But so after coming off of, it's just a 1-2 punch. I came off the RNC and then the DNC comes around and I'm just like, oh God, I was kind of enjoying watching the implosion between the Bernie or bus people and the Clinton machine, but that just got old really fast and I just stopped listening. It's like, so I don't even know what our president said last night. I didn't listen. I refuse to at this point. I tell you, when I stopped listening, I wasn't really following it super closely. I'd dip in and out here and there in the car and, you know, read the news. But when a woman gets on stage and shouts joyfully and announces her abortion she had and gets a raucous standing ovation cheer from the room that she killed a child, man, we've just gone down the rabbit hole. And I mean, it's not like this is a new reality. The only way I was kind of a Republican in my earlier, more evangelistic times before I started kind of reading books and being kind of politically aware in some ways, was that I was a one-issue voter. And abortion, I mean, if you're going to be a one-issue voter, abortion's a pretty dang good one to vote on. You know, it's, I don't know, the Holocaust. It's like what could Hitler put up beside the Holocaust? You're like, you know, I don't like that Holocaust thing, but he's got some good thoughts on education reform. There's just nothing. There's nothing I can't vote for you if you're for the Holocaust. You lose my attention on everything else when you're for the Holocaust. But, you know, the problem is there's more to saving human lives than just keeping people from taking them. There's a bigger agenda there. There's a bigger set of issues there. And I don't think either party has it right on this. So I did say, I'm going to end this segment. Someone posted a link to the American Solidarity Party. And, you know, they're a tiny little party. Their acceptance speeches were like just on webcams and stuff. I mean, I don't think they have a chance in any way, shape, or form. I didn't, you know, but I read their platform and I'm like, wow, someone has a party that sounds remotely like what I believe in. That's, so I don't know, maybe we start now and 4 years from now we can see something, but, you know, probably not. So. All right. So when we get back, I want to talk about the role that freedom plays and the separation between church and state and these different spheres of state and church and all that. And what do we do when we're in this environment when the culture and the mentality is so hostile? So you're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Raley. We'll be back in just a moment. See you on the other side.
Lynn Howie Craver hanging. And it's dark.
Redbox Media now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our friend of the show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. So, in the midst of my political and cultural despair, a ray of light shone in my memory. And I remembered that my friend Jonathan Gailey had given me a document. We met outside of a Theology on Tap one night and started talking, and we had a really amazing conversation. And he said, "I want to send you something. I want you to read it." And he sent me an original presence, which is notes from Father Julian Caron's address to the assembly with the responsibles of communion liberation in Italy. Father Julian Caron is the man who replaced Father or Monsignor Luigi Gisani as the head of the movement Communion Liberation, which is an Italian movement that has gone global, but it's still, I mean, it's a force. Communion Liberation is a force in Italy. It is heavily ingrained in the culture of Italy, and there are people in some of the highest places. It's tied to certain political movements, and it was founded in Italy, and in Italy it is a thing. It's kind of it's a small interesting subculture within the Church of America that is a place that I found kind of a bit of a home. As I say all the time, I am the worst member of Communion Liberation. I'm probably not even what could be considered a member at the moment. At least there's not enough evidence to convict me, but it's something that every time I dip into Communion Liberation, every time I read anything from that movement, anytime I sit down and have a real conversation with someone who's deep in the movement, I come away better. I come away with a fresh perspective and some hope and a reason to an insight that I can apply that gets me out of the spinning frustration in my head, you know? And so I certainly do not speak for the movement in any way, shape, or form. I realized I started to look up a chapter for someone yesterday after talking to him online, and try to get him to go. I'm going to make an appeal, a commercial, as it were, for the movement Communion Liberation. If you are out there in the world trying to figure out how to go about this thing we call life and Catholicism and Christianity and just being a human being, a man before God, I don't think you can find a better group of people to spend some time around than the people in Communion Liberation. Now you could go, I would recommend you go grab a book by Father Gisani. A really great place to start is this little thin black book, a little tiny book where Father Julian Caron has went through all the writings of Monsignor Gisani and pulled kind of the essentials, the greatest hits, as it were. And it's called Christ, God's Companionship with Man. That's really a good play. I think it's like $8 or something. Really worth getting. Really, really, really worth starting. But if you want to dive in, if you're a person that likes to dive in and do the real thing, Gisani's Percorso, they call it, is his trilogy, beginning with the religious sense, which is kind of the idea that's at the core of Communion Liberation, followed by a book called At the Origin of the Christian Claim, and then followed finally by a book called Why the Church. Those are all amazing. The Journey to Truth is an Experience is another really good one that kind of is another encapsulation of these ideas. I think it was written before these. And if you're the kind of person that likes to read about something before you dive into it, there's a book called A Generative Thought that is writings by a bunch of different scholars on Communion and Liberation. And about the thought, or about the Monsignor Gisani and the thought of Monsignor Gisani. one of the chapters is called On Man. It's by a fellow you may have heard of. His name is Jorge Bergoglio, who is now Pope Francis. Very, very good book. David Schindler has a chapter in there. My friend Michael Wallstein, father of my friend Pater Edmund Wallstein, has a chapter in there. Really worth reading. A Generative Thought. And I think you can get all these from Human Adventure Books. But they're all on Amazon as well. So anyway, just I have been deeply enriched by my friendships with the people in that movement. And so I didn't plan on doing this. I just burned half a segment doing a commercial for Communion Liberation. But it's something that my friend Tim that I'm going to see is in the movement. And I have a feeling that I've kind of made a goal to come back from Cincinnati and to re-engage the life of the community, to re-engage the life of the movement, and put myself back in it, because I see them having answers for me and insights for me that are so imperative for Calyx, in addition to myself, for my apostolate, and how to live. And so that's what I want to talk about today, is how should we live? And I'm kind of a broken record here lately. My two options here lately, if you've been listening, are describing in detail the dumpster fire that is our current world, or telling you that you have to live an experience as a mode of encounter with the living God. Those are the two things you've been hearing from me for the most part. And the reason why is because when I get away in my own mind from the thought of living encounter and trying to see that as the answer in each moment, of knowing myself as a thirst for the infinite, and then allowing myself to live as a question, that at any given moment the answer is Christ, and then letting Christ show up and be the answer to the question that is my existence, that is who I am, that question that I am embodied in, that embodied question, that the answer is Christ, letting Christ show up and be that answer in the moment, and living out of that original presence, that living out of that continual engagement. But the part that I'm missing is the community side. I'm a CL hermit at the moment, and that is the polar opposite of what they're about. And so that's what you're hearing from me all the time, and that's going to dip in and out all the time. With videos of bats swimming and griping about Denver drivers, and you know, obviously this is the counter position. I'm going to talk about coffee. And speaking of coffee, a delicious Kenyan from Commonwealth Coffee. If you're looking for coffee, Commonwealth Coffee, go online, buy some. Amazing people that make amazing coffee. I should start doing like those old time ads, you know, like those shows when all the shows were live, and a commercial would be that, you know, Jack Benny or something would hold up a box of Borax and talk about it, or so I just start doing commercials, those old timey commercials where I just insert plugs for things that I love in the show. I do that all the time, but maybe I should make it for real. And by for real, I mean send me a check. That's what I mean. So I want to look at today. As I said before, I want to reiterate something I said yesterday, I think it was, as we go off to the break here. We are living in the early church again. We have come full circle. And the separation of church and state is ironically being eroded by the very people that insist so deeply on a separation of church and state. It's just the church is this new religion of man, these new human rights, these new definitions of freedom, this new definition of hate, this new definition of discrimination, all these new definitions. And, you know, just when they finally got a reprieve from the federal level, my college, Thomas Aquinas College, is fighting a bill going through the state legislature in California, trying to attack religious schools and trying to force them into this new paradigm, trying to force them to pay obeisance to this new God that they're that the state is creating, you know? But you know what? Like I said, we've been here before. This is home for us. In some way, you know, from Constantine to the 1950s, it was kind of a weird vacation for us. This isn't where we're at home. We're at home in a place where we are not a privileged voice, that we're not just the people running the show, and we have to attract rather than instruct. That is where we're at home. That's where we came from. If by home I mean, you know, where you were born and where you were raised, this is where we're from. Having the culture is not how we were designed. Having to go up on Mars Hill and do our TED talk right alongside everybody else and be laughed at and possibly killed while we rescue pagan babies that have been, you know, left on the hillside and raising them. That's where we're from. That is reality for Christianity. We've kind of been on vacation. So, all right, let's go to the break. When we get back, I'll try to wrap this up. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so I've been reading this document, and I just finished it today, An Original Presence. I'm not ready to go line by line and try to, I'm not qualified to tell you what Father Caron is talking about. A lot of this has to do with the current moment in light of the history of the movement and some things that we faced in the late 60s as a movement and some missteps that we made and stuff. And so that isn't all relevant for what we're doing here on The Counterposition, but there was a ton of insights from this. So I'm going to reread this document and then try to get some insights for you and maybe go through it. But there's a few little things that I want to and I'm going to kind of go backwards. I'm starting with the conclusions they came to and not really talking so much about the way we got there. There's a quote that I'm trying to find that Pope Francis said that is, here it is. That describes the situation we're in. He says, this is from his address to to participants at the International Pastoral Congress on the World's Big Cities in 2014. Pope Francis says, "We come from a centuries-old pastoral practice in which the church has been the single point of reference for culture. It is our legacy. We are no longer in that time, whether we like it or not. We are no longer in Christendom, no more. Today, we are no longer the only ones who produce culture, nor the first ones, nor the most listened to. We therefore need a change in pastoral mentality because men, women, families, and the different groups living in the cities expect from us and need the good news that is that is Jesus and his gospel." That is the state of things. That is the State of the Union address for reality right now. That being said, we have to live in this world, you know? And like I said, in some ways, this is where we're from. So we have to figure out what can we do. And I, you know, there's been up to this point, especially in the political world, there's been a real hard push, and I'm not saying this needs to stop. I think we need to keep doing this, of trying to change things and impose our view of reality onto the laws of the nation, because they were written in, it was written into the laws of our nation. Now, I'm not going to come here and claim that America, quote unquote, is a Christian nation, in the sense that all the people who founded America were these Orthodox Christians. Some of them were. Some of them had a whole ton of weird Masonic stuff all built into it. They were almost all Protestants. But what was interesting is that some through the lens of John Locke, some through the lens of other places, the a real serious understanding of natural law was in the role of the place that humans play and before God, and the role that that plays our dignity. You know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, you know, that all men are created equal. So men are created, endowed by their creator. So this, the things that we have are endowments, and they come from our creator, and they are, we have these inalienable rights, and that our creaturely status before this creator is the source of all these inalienable rights. We are endowed. We have these rights come from God because of our relationship to him. And that is at the core of our nation. And that, in that sense, that is a very truly Christian way of viewing things. And in a lot of ways, it's a very Western, just from Aristotle to Alistair MacIntyre. I mean, that's the that is the way we view the West, right? In that natural law mode. But the whether we like it or not, the world has lost its mind. And we are in a situation. Now, here's the thing, is that we have this separation of church and state. Now, I know those words do not appear. But from way back, where that kind of comes from, I think it got weirdly morphed in America to a certain extent. But there is a certain truth, and the most dangerous lies are the ones that have 85% truth in them. And, you know, when Christ says something that seems so innocuous, right? Almost kind of like he's compromising. When they try to corner him on paying taxes to Caesar, he says, render unto Caesar what is Caesar, and render unto God what is God's, right? But saying that there are things that are God's that are not Caesar's, them were revolutionary words at the time. Saying that these two, because, you know, look at the early church and all the persecutions. Look at all this persecution. What the bulk of the persecution was from them being unwilling to burn incense to an idol or something. I mean, go back before Christ. Look at the Maccabean revolt in some of those moments when just these men would just refuse to eat pork. Now, praise God for the new covenant. And, you know, and it's one of its great sacramentals, which is bacon. Not Francis Bacon. Okay, bacon isn't technically a sacramental. But, I mean, if there's a place we can taste and see that the Lord is good in a very literal sense, I think it would be hand-cut, artisanal, local, pasture-raised, beautiful bacon. But this is such a counterposition aside. But so we have these two spheres, state and the church are not the same. Now, what's weird is that during Christendom, we got out of that problem with Constantine. And then we kind of got ourselves back into it, but we were the ones running the game, right? And so we kind of liked that, and we built Christendom. And you and the reason why you have all these big, pretty churches and all these amazing works that were done in that little over, you know, 1,500 years of when we were kind of running the culture, so to speak, was because we had we had all the money and all the land. We were the only ones really producing culture, and we had an ocean of people with a vow of poverty to go do the work. That just ain't so anymore. And if you don't think that's true, go look at half the local parishes in your town, and the reason they look so scary is because it wasn't monks designing and building them. It's like, but now we're in this situation where we have in America, we have had kind of like we lost the role of religion in public life to a certain extent, as embodied in our laws, with this deep demarcation between the state and the church and state. But now, when you see what the state is turning into and what our laws are turning into, it may be time to kind of just embrace a separation, because you don't really want to be allied with that too much. I mean, it's becoming a mess. Now, the problem is that our state is recapturing that theocracy, so to speak. And that theocracy is a theocracy of this new religion of man, and all these redefined terms of what hate is and what discrimination is and what marriage is and what life is and what persons are and all this. And the problem is that they're trying to make no room for us to live inside of this environment without burning incense to the idols. And we can't have an educational institution. You can't run a bake shop and not do a cake for a gay wedding, because that's considered discrimination. You can't not support something that you consider to be a moral decision that you're not supporting, because they're now using the language of the civil rights movement and discrimination, and you saying you don't want to support something that is a moral decision in public that you don't feel is right. You're suddenly saying blacks aren't welcome at my lunch counter, or get to the back of the bus, which is dangerous, because now then this modern young movement's coming up and they're giving a choice between hate or this new thing, and the goodness in them is rejecting hate, and they're being brought into this new cult because they think that their options are hate or the cult. And that's ugly. So what do we do? I wanted to get to the answer more than this in this show, but hey, as luck would have it, I have a show tomorrow. I think we have to live it. And that may mean martyrdom at some point. It's like, the question is how well do you sing while you're dying? I don't know. It's whether do you go down laughing and blessing those around you, or do you hold on and at like, this is all there is, you know? I mean, that's, you look at these early church martyrdoms and you're like, wow, how could they do that? You know, how could they go to their death with a song on their lips? I mean, like seeking it almost, you know, it's kind of perverse in some ways, but there's kind of an eschatological, kind of like a towards the end of things hope in that, the same way there is in celibacy, that we point with our actions and our lives and how we do things. And that's what we have to do. We have to. And the final quote I want to give you before I move on is, from Father Giuzzani, and he says, this is not the last quote I wanted to do. Do I have time to do this? Pope Francis says, Christians have the duty to proclaim the gospel without excluding anyone. Instead of seeming to impose new obligations, they should appear as people who wish to share their joy, who point to a horizon of beauty, and who invite others to a delicious banquet. It is not by proselytizing that the church grows, but by attraction. Or as my friend Lorenzo once said, all Christianity spreads by jealousy. We have to have something so delicious and so beautiful and so amazing that people are drawn to it. Drawn to it to the point that they're willing to take up a position with us against reality as it is in our world, and possibly even be martyred for it, because it's that attractive, because it's that beautiful. And the center of that has to be the encounter. It has to be a constant living before God of each of us and in our families. But I'm out of time. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. I truly appreciate you coming out. See you next time.
I take your place, my old stone. I take your place, marble stone.